Hi everyone, welcome to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. Hi Faith, how are you?
Hi, I'm coping all right with the lockdown, although last week was one of those weeks, you know, where you're just like, what is the point of anything anymore?
Yeah, fully in the existential trenches.
Very much so. So I had a bit of a wobbler to Greg and I was like, I've just had enough of doing nothing and having nothing to look forward to. So I sent him off to Asda and he bought £75 worth of alcohol and mixers and food. And I was like demanding that at least one night a week we do like a themed night. So we did like a Mexican themed night last night and it was so good. And it's made me feel so much better.
Oh, I like that. What did you have?
So we just made some like quesadillas and like, obviously Greg made vegan ones. And then we made like tequila sunrises and listened to mariachi music while we had our dinner. And honestly, it's like the most basic thing ever, but it was like brought me sheer joy.
You're reconstituting the Chiquitos experience in its entirety. All you need is a piñata, maybe some sombreros.
I know. I feel like I need to do like a Nando's themed one. I'll download some like Portuguese music, make some chicken.
I like that idea. I can't wait for the moment that I see someone approaching my table with a margarita. That's going to be a good day.
I know. We were like making cocktails. I was like, God, I miss just being like handed these and like sat in a nice sunny beer garden somewhere, like outdoors on a terrace.
I was speaking to my friend in Brussels the other day and she said that from this Monday just passed, they're now allowed to see four people. So I don't know if I mentioned this on the last pod.
I'm not sure. I think you might have.
Yeah, so they're doing the social bubble experiment. So they're actually calling it the Belgian experiment because they're testing it out in Belgium. That's kind of like the pilot scheme. And then it's kind of speculated that if it works in Belgium as planned, that that's we'll have a similar system here. Kind of pick your four people.
Yeah. I just feel like it would work so much better as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's that thing, like, they've kind of been like, oh, yeah, like, X amount of people can go back to work. But really, all people are bothered about is seeing, like, friends and family.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where now they actually have to incentivize people to listen to the rules. I mean, I'm not an economist, I'm not a scientist, but, you know, I will do whatever I'm told. I'm a goody two shoes. I'll complain about it, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to flout, you know, the government line.
Exactly the same. I'm like, I'll hate everything about it, I'll resent doing it, but I'll be damned if I'm not going to abide by it.
But there are lots of people that aren't going to, and I think the government's going to have to give them some leeway with that, because otherwise it, you know, they'll just kind of go to the other extreme. So I think that's what they need to think about. And it is ridiculous that they've said you can have a nanny or a cleaner coming into your home because it stimulates the economy, but you're not allowed to have, you know, one person from one other household in your home.
Just the most wild concept ever.
Because I was really annoyed about this idea that you couldn't kind of see people in your home, that you had to go out in parks. But that's actually to do with the fact that the virus gets killed off a lot faster in UV rays.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so that's kind of why they're saying, well, you can meet up in the park, because if there is some virus lingering on a surface, it's killed off a lot faster. It's a more hostile environment. And so what they were worried about is if you start having people going to different households, you know, there's door handles, you know, you might share like a coffee mug or surfaces. And so it's a lot easier for transmission to occur. But they never said that. So yeah, they need to clarify that and say, look, there's a scientific reason why you can go and meet in the park, but you can't meet at home. But then they counteract it somewhat by saying, oh, but it's okay for cleaners and nannies and, you know, domestic help to come in.
I feel like that's the thing, is like they just kind of put these rules and regulations out there. But if they gave an actual like logical reason that people can understand behind it, I think a lot more people would be on board with it.
Yeah, if they'd have said in that address, you know, the reason that you can't have people in your own house, because in my mind, I was like, but my flat is self-contained, you know, I clean it, I'm on top of it, you know, it's just been me in there. So surely I should be able to have people over. But no, there is actually a scientific reason for it. They just haven't really communicated that very effectively.
Which I think just summarizes everything, really, doesn't it?
It's, yeah, just been a clusterfuck, really, hasn't it? And then the other thing that's Bravo related, did you see this whole Sheena editing controversy?
No, I am literally so happy that we've got justice for Sheena in this sense. I mean, we all speculated about it and we really all knew it. I just don't understand why this woman has basically confessed that they need to like kiss her ass in order to get a good edit.
Yeah, I think that's why, that's where she kind of went wrong with the phrasing, because like, of course you're going to give people different edits, you know, someone's going to get the villain edit, someone's going to get like the angry edit, someone's going to get the hot mess, someone's going to get the cringe, and we love the cringe, but I just, with Sheena, it's like relentless.
Yeah, and you can tell it's like a very targeted thing, which I just think is such bullshit. It's like, we all know what we sign up for when we watch like reality TV. Like, we know it's edited. We know there's kind of a sort of hidden agenda with the way that they cut and splice things together. I just don't understand why she's made it such a personal thing of like, because Sheena hasn't been like her best buddy that she's then really gone at her.
But I just wonder if, okay, because we're obviously watching the show from a cynical standpoint, obviously loving it, but being very aware of the inner workings of what's going on. The people that watch this kind of stuff unironically and are like genuinely taking it at face value, like that's why it makes me feel like it's a bit much to give Sheena this edit, because there are genuinely people out there that are watching this being like, oh my God, Sheena's so boy crazy. She's flirting with a 12-year-old, you know?
Yeah, and they can't see the kind of the irony, or can't see that it's just a sort of like slightly bitchy edit. Like, they think that's just generally how things have played out.
Yeah.
So I know, I do feel bad for her. God bless Sheena. She really takes the brunt of it. She carries the show, let's be honest.
As I said, she is truly a Jesus in that she sacrifices her own kind of public image to bring us the cringe, you know, and she died for the sins of the other cast members that weren't bringing us great content this season. I am glad that Jax has stepped up the crazy.
I am as well. It feels like such a welcome return to good old-fashioned Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah, I think he needed to really have this kick in around Ep 7, not Ep 19, but I'll take it.
I was going to say, I mean, considering next week's the season finale, it feels a little bit late in the game for it. Like, this would have been great TV maybe half a season ago.
Yeah.
Just God bless him, really.
Oh, I love that we're giving our directors cut.
I know. Like, if we had edited, this is how it would have gone.
Yeah, because of course we're far more talented.
Absolutely.
We both want to do these things. So yeah, Sheena Gate, lots of people getting very angry. Like, I don't think it's worth getting super angry about, you know, I think these editors are just doing their jobs. But on the other hand, I do think that Sheena gets a particularly hard time. And I don't think this woman kind of going on a podcast and like lolling at that was necessarily a great move.
I agree. I totally agree.
So, episode 19, A Tale of Two Pool Parties. So we open with Tom and Tom coming to Sir to do their forfeit for losing the softball game. They're coming to clean the toilets.
So I was under the impression that it was meant to be the whole team that had to come do them, but I suppose it has just fallen on Tom and Tom as bar owners to take on that.
I mean, it looked to me like there were only two loos to clean anyway. Like, it didn't, you know, it wasn't like a long row of them.
Yeah, it did feel like if you tried to cram the whole serving staff of like Tom into there, it would have just been people back to back with a toothbrush and like a 4-inch square piece of wall in front of them.
And so Lisa wanders in her jewel encrusted tie going, are the toilets blocked?
I just thought that was like a genuine thing that Tom and Tom would have taken on unabashed, like unprompted, would be like, oh, the toilets at the restaurant that's nothing to do with us are blocked, sure, let us go get our elbows in.
Yeah, I was just not really into fecal matter and Lisa being invoked in the same scene. It just didn't feel right.
No, it didn't sit right with me. And you know that's the only time she has ever been in those toilets since they were first constructed.
I also feel like, is this good, like, native advertising for your restaurant?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I suppose at least they were thorough enough to be using a toothbrush.
True. But anyway, as Ramona would say, it felt very déclassé to me, the scene. But I did think that Schwartz looked at home in his sweaty little toilet cubicle. It felt right.
It did. It felt like he truly belonged.
So then we launch into an extended fantasy in Schwartz's testimonial, where Lisa is in the bathtub shaving her legs.
Yeah, I don't really, like, obviously I know she kind of made a little joke, but truly the level of detail and the picture that he painted. I mean, we already know from the imaginary dinner party situation that Schwartz can weave a yarn that's quite involved. Yeah. Really a whole other level.
He really goes into the most minuscule details to just really paint a picture. But I, you know what, I used to go out with a guy who who really liked shaving my legs.
Stop it.
I'm serious.
I can't believe these people exist.
Yeah, and like, oh my. Just like, sure. Whatever. I mean, I'm very much in the camp of like, you do whatever you want to do. Like, as long as it doesn't actively offend me, like, I'll go along with it. I don't really mind.
I'm just too much of like a type A control freak where I just like, you're doing it wrong. Give it here.
Yeah, that's true.
You've gone too much against the grain. Hand it over.
I just felt like this whole thing, Tom clearly has a lot of extraneous sexual energy right now, which he's really channeling into very specific mental scenarios around Lisa Vanderpump.
I know. And he's always had that like Brett-esque kind of like secret infatuation with her, which I think is just kind of, it's really coming to a head now, isn't it? I think nothing's working on like an equal playing field with her recently. It's just opened a whole new world for him.
The good thing is with Schwartz, he's actually too much of a damp squib to ever act on it. Like with Brett, you can imagine him genuinely getting a bit like Patrick, a bit slimy, but you know that Schwartz saves everything for the testimonial where she's out of earshot.
Yeah, he wouldn't dream of saying anything across that line to her, into her face at all.
So James is back at his rightful place behind the DJ booth and Sir.
I know. I'm enjoying this arc for him. I'm warming up to him. I still don't like him as a person, but I am warming up to him.
Oh, you'll come around eventually, I think. So Schwartz and Tom come and join him. And Schwartz is like, yeah, I should really wash my hands. And then Brittany walks up and he just immediately embraces her and pulls her in for a hug.
Yeah. That kind of thing just would not fly these days, would it?
Disgusting. Yeah, Schwartz is definitely patient zero.
Oh, 100%. You know it stemmed from him.
I think Brittany looks really lovely with her curly hair.
I do. I think it suits her so much more than when it's like pulled back or when she has that big like bouffant-y kind of thing.
Yeah, I think if her brow lift wasn't so aggressive, she could almost be like a pre-Raphaelite muse of sorts.
Unfortunately, the Botox has gone to her.
Yeah, it's her face is too, it looks very severe, I think. It's almost, it wasn't pointed to begin with. I feel like her face was quite rounded and quite soft, but I think she's become more harsh in the face.
Yeah, I was thinking this as well. I was trying to put my finger on what it is, but I think that's it. And it feels like between the brow lift and I think she's drawing her eyebrows on with like quite a severe arch as well. And I think it just makes her look sort of scowly all the time.
Yeah, like a Disney villain or something.
Yeah, maybe it's just a perma left over from speaking to Jax on a daily basis, though.
That's fair. It would start to have like a physical impact on you at some point. So Brittany is really not happy that Tom is having a competing pool party. And basically, almost as soon as she comes to say hello, she flounces off and she's like, fuck y'all. It was a very weird micro interaction. I feel like there must have been stuff in this conversation that was cut out because it was very swift.
Yeah, I agree. And it kind of went 0 to 100 and then just ended immediately. And I feel like there's definitely been a lot of stuff being cut out in the edit of this.
Yeah.
What are your opinions on the the contrasting pool parties? Do you think Sandoval was right, wrong?
Look, I will defend Sandoval no matter what he does, okay, because I love him. But I do think that Jax was the one who kicked off and started sort of disinviting people left, right, and centre. And that's actually what prompted him to be like, oh, sod it. Well, we'll just do something on the same day. You know, it wasn't just like, oh, they're having a pool party, so let's,
yeah,
let's make a rival event. It was like, oh, if he's going to act out like this and be really rude, then we'll be rude back.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So I agree. And like, I do think Jax brought it on himself. However, it's just the kind of like, I'm so afraid of confrontation and the drama and the kind of nitty gritty bits of it, that it would have been something that I'd have definitely thought of and been like, yeah, that would be such a good idea. But I'd have been too afraid of like the petty drama to ever act on it. So whilst I kind of wholeheartedly agree with the theory of it, I'd have just been too uncomfortable in either situation. And I'd have probably done exactly what Max did, where he just dipped out of both of them, was like, no, not choosing. I'll just sit at home on my own. It's fine. And then no one can be cross with me.
I did like that as Max's diplomatic call, to be fair. Yeah, I think I would have thought about it a lot in my head and be like, ha, that would be great. I'd love to do that. And then I'd have shown up at Jax's anyway and sat there and been really like miserable and bitchy.
Literally same.
Dana,
the British way.
It is the British way, you're right. I mean, we don't have pools to have parties in. No. The best we have is, so my half-sister ordered a hot tub, an inflatable hot tub.
Oh my God.
Lockdown. Which, to be fair, is quite cool and, you know, could be a vibe. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, it's just not a heated outdoor pool, is it?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like my friend has like an outdoor hot tub in their back garden. And they've had like a few like hot tub parties, and it is like proper, like fully built in structure, like permanent structure. They've got like a little outhouse. It's almost like a pool house, and like got the TV set up and it's heated and like sheltered and stuff. So it's like you can even be in it in the snow and it's still really warm. But I know it's amazing. But I have this thing where it's like, because our back garden's really just open, like there's three other gardens that like look over into ours, and I'm just like, I couldn't wander around.
No, the judgment of the neighbors would be so heavy.
It would be unbearable. And like the idea of my like elderly neighbors just watching me flounce across our like British garden in my bikini is too much to handle.
When we were at uni in London, we lived in a mews. So we had four student houses, and then we had this big courtyard in the middle. We thought it would be so much fun, right? Living with this group of student houses. We were so ready to be partying. Everyone was so lame in all of the houses. It was so depressing. So there were two London College of Fashion houses. That was me, my friends, and then the fashion journalists. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else was just so lame. Anyway, in the summer, we decided to buy a pool, like an actual pool, not a hot tub, inflatable pool.
Incredible.
Argus. And we filled it up from the kitchen sink. And then we had this huge party, and we had loads of people that came up from like Bournemouth. And then, oh God. So I had been drinking at a pub near the train station. I met this guy, and I had like invited him to this party. I don't know fucking why. I was such an idiot. This is when I was like 19, to be fair. And he rocked up, and turns out he was actually super dodgy, and he brought loads of his dodgy friends with him. And then there was some fight that broke out between these guys and the guys that came up from Brighton. And I remember, right, just hearing this guy's head smack on the ground.
Oh.
In the fight, and thinking, oh my God, this is so bad, like this is really bad. And I remember I went into the bathroom to like hide out from it, and there were a bunch of other people, and I was just like, I don't want to get involved, you know. We had police, we had the ambulance. It was like, oh, it's a mess. Everyone was fine in the end, I do need to say that. So then I remember I was just sitting like fully dressed in the bathtub with a bunch of people, and I just remember this guy being like, I just want you to know and to be aware that as a white woman, you're very vulnerable to voodoo, okay? I just want you to know that. Yes. And me being like, okay. Like no. Trying to get my head together. Thinking, oh my God, I'm going to go to jail for like negligence.
Yes.
And this guy's telling me about voodoo.
Oh my god.
So I think I'm slightly traumatized at any kind of inflatable pool setup as a result.
Completely understandable.
So Dana and Brett are at a restaurant and he's got his curly hair out again. They're at, what's it called, Hyde?
Yeah.
Charlie works.
Of course.
She calls his hair unbelievable. Dana calls Brett's hair unbelievable.
Oh, the kind of like simpering compliments that she keeps like raining on him are making me so uncomfortable. Like when Charlie like called, like it's like, oh, you really like, you know, like a flannel shirt. And Dana was like, oh yeah, I think it's like a sexy Paul Bunyan. And Charlie's like, is he though?
Like, who is Paul Bunyan?
I don't know. I don't know the reference. Is this an American thing?
It doesn't sound sexy. It's got Bunyan in it.
Maybe I'm mispronouncing his name, but I don't understand the reference. But like, she's just so like simpery, sickly, like complimentary of him. And it makes me so uncomfortable as somebody who is not overtly complimentary of anybody.
Yeah, so Charlie asks Brett, like, oh, a flannel shirt's like your thing. And then we get this heavy plaid montage. I feel like Dana is still in her testimonials and stuff. She's still trying to, you're right, plead a very heavy case for this whole Brett thing. But it's just so wooden.
I know, like, it feels like she's trying so hard to, like, overcompensate for something. It's like she's trying to force the storyline and the narrative. Just because, I don't know, maybe she thinks it makes her more relevant or interesting or kind of a bit more of, like, a key player in the series. But, like, it just feels so forced.
All these two do as a couple is talk about Max's reaction to their dynamic rather than actually having any dynamic to experience or sit in the first place. Do you know what I mean? They talk about themselves as an outward entity towards others.
Yeah, as like a united thing, like an object, rather than just enjoying their relationship. I use relationship with air quotes, but relationship.
Yeah, there's no actual content to it. It's only form. There's no content.
Yeah.
Critical theory did teach me something.
I do have to say as well, though, like, Brett fucking loves talking about what a good person he is, doesn't he?
Oh, loves it.
Oh, like, just these long language, never-ending monologues of what a great person he is and how he's always just trying to be a good person. And then he always manages to shoehorn some kind of, like, clunky metaphor into what a good person he is. It's just awful.
He's like a good guy, TM.
Yeah.
And when he's like, you know, it's like murky waters, but I've got a big boat, you know, so, like, onwards we go. 55 knots. What? Oh, and then do you know what annoys me as well? He's got this like smug little smile, which is just such a little annoying full stop to his rambling.
Yeah, like he's so proud of what he's just presented to the audience.
Do you know what though? I actually want Brett to stay on because he makes my face itch with how cringe he is, and it's actually bringing me a lot of joy to have someone to arbitrarily channel my hate into on screen.
I agree. I feel like it's like the perfect sort of, not the villain, but the perfect like ick factor that I think every reality show should have.
I completely agree. I also thought it was quite cool that we see Charlie working at her other job. Like, I think that seems to be a lot more common in America. I mean, I know that we kind of both work multiple jobs
in
sort of capacity, but I think in America, like, I can just never get over how odd it must be to have massive student debt, you know, to the point where some people never pay it off, or having to spend $1,000 a month on health insurance. So I thought it was quite cool that they showed her at another place and it made her feel more human.
Yeah, like more of like a three-dimensional character.
Mm.
But I agree, I think it's kind of nice to see like a little bit of like their lives outside of it as well. Like, I know it's like, especially with like the OG kind of crew as well, it's like they haven't bought these like great big massive mansions and things based purely off their own, you know, appearance on the show. So it'd be nice to see a little bit more of like their ventures. Like, I know like Sheena has a few things going on, and like I know we get to see like snippets of like Christian's like James May collection, stuff like that. But I think it'd be nice to see a lot more of like the processes behind it, because I don't think any of us are under the illusion that these people are living their lives based purely off Vanderpump Rules payouts.
Or a waiter's salary.
Yeah,
I think as well, it speaks a lot to Sheena as a person that she's still got this successful podcast. She's getting into, you know, she's kind of doing all of that stuff without actually getting a lot of airtime on the show about it.
Yeah. Whereas,
you know, how much did we hear about Stassi's book and her live show? And, you know, even Kristen, like you say, gets quite a lot of airtime.
Yeah, and I just think it's kind of like, obviously, Schwartz and Katie, there's nothing that, apart from like Schwartz like co-owning TomTom, there's nothing that either of them have that's like a business venture that's mentioned. Obviously Sheena, it's never mentioned. Even Jax and Brittany, like, I don't know how they've afforded that house, because I can't imagine either of them are making that level of income to be able to afford these houses, which must be nearing the millions.
Oh, I think Jax is probably very much up to his eyeballs in credit card debt.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I can fully imagine being the kind of person that's just, like, flashy and shows off about everything but has nothing to back it up.
Because I don't think any of them come from money. I think Stassi, maybe, a tiny...
Yeah, I think Stassi has that kind of, like, upper-middle-class kind of background. But I don't know what... Like, I saw, like, when her and Beau bought that house, it was, like $1.2 million or something like that. And obviously, Beau's, like, a casting agent and... Stassi has her book, but I can't imagine these things have generated that level of income.
No, because your mortgage would still be, if you put 100k down, your mortgage would still probably be about 7,000 to 8,000 a month.
Easily. So yeah, it'd be kind of like, it would just be interesting to sort of see a bit more of their lives, like, outside of the show. And, like, I know the show is the anchor point of everything, but it'd be nice just to give them a bit more, like, almost like context as a human being.
Ah, Stassi Schroeder, net worth. Well, celebritynetworth.com says she's worth 2 million.
All right.
But then wealthypersons.com says 500,000. Celeb money says 300,000. And then the net worth portal says 40,000. So who knows?
It's really a very diverse range there.
Celebs trend now, 20 million at the age of 31.
Up.
Well, I don't think it's 20 million.
I don't either, considering Lisa Vanderpump's worth like 60 million or something. I can't imagine Stassi's managed to accumulate a third of her income.
No, you can't trust any of these things. And also, you don't know what's real money and what's like, you know, what I love on reality shows is when they're buying like houses they can't afford, or, you know, leasing cars or like renting things to make it look like they're doing better than they are.
Yeah, like I kind of love the Tom and Ariana's kind of like reality of the fact that they just have no furniture in this house. Like, they moved into that house probably about 8-9 months ago, and there's just no furniture in it at all.
Yeah, that is real. And also it's sensible, and that's why they'll be so much better in the long run, you know, at the end of this. And actually, it's funny that you say that, because at this point in the episode, Brittany comes storming in at home. Jax is at the kitchen island wearing, for some reason, a backwards baseball cap indoors. Straight men really evade me sometimes.
No, it really just confuses me.
And so she tells him that they're going to have a competing pool party, and his immediate response is just, they have no furniture.
It's really like a point of contention for people that they, like, Tom and Ariana haven't bought furniture yet. It's like, maybe they're just taking their time.
Yeah, why does it anger them so much?
Yeah, maybe it's because, like, again, what we were saying about Jax has this way of projecting that whatever he does is right. And maybe it's he's just racked up a fucking bunch of debt to furnish this house, and then it's just furious that other people haven't had the audacity to do that.
So Brittany seems to be primarily disappointed that their blow-up slide won't get the recognition it deserves under the circumstances.
I mean, hey, I'm here for some inflatables, but, I mean, even when they were throwing this party, how many people are they expecting to be there? Like, was the slide really necessary? It also goes into, like, the long side of their pool, which just strikes me as dangerous, quite frankly.
I did think this. It goes to, like, the shorter side.
Yeah.
You just come off the slide and just slam straight into the wall on the other end. Jax is getting so worked up about the whole situation. He calls Tom a woman immediately after saying his actions are that of a bratty child, which very much reveals what he thinks women act like.
I was going to say, and I love that, though, at some point he just kind of goes like, yeah, he's acting like a fucking woman. Not that I've got anything against women, but, like, you know.
Yeah, he says, I mean, not to bash women, but they're worse than children. Like, okay, good.
I'm glad we straightened that out.
Is he just eating a big plate of scrambled eggs?
I think he is.
It's very protein heavy, I suppose, but...
It strikes me as probably the only thing he's ever been able to make himself, because you can probably make it in a microwave.
Well, if he was outsourcing even his sandwich making to Brittany from day one, then what hope did we have?
So true.
So Jax is really mad and decides to go to the gym for the third time in a day.
This is just ludicrous. There is no fucking reason that any human being on this planet, no matter how stressed you are, needs to be at a gym three times a day. Never.
A lot of men's sanity seems to be very closely tied to the gym.
Yeah, like, it does seem to hinge on it. And, like, I understand to a degree. Like, I find that, like, usually when I'm feeling particularly fed up or stressed or angry, like, no matter how much I don't want to go to the gym, if I do go, I generally feel a bit better afterwards. But not to the point where I'm going three times a day, because it's just serving as, like, a preventative measure from me, like, screaming out my other half.
Yeah, having a full-on breakdown.
Yeah, that's not a healthy coping mechanism.
I haven't set foot in a gym since January 2017.
I love that for you.
Sometimes I flirt with the idea of it, but I think I'd rather read a book, you know, if I'm being honest with myself. So stay true to you, that's what I say.
Absolutely.
So he's at this thing called the Lit Method, and the gym is weirdly lit, so I'm guessing that's where the name comes from. It looks like a nightclub, but it's just continuous orange floodlights.
It just sounds like the most, like, LA bullshit ever, doesn't it? The Lit Method.
It's like CrossFit, but just, it's CrossFit bred with SoulCycle.
Yeah, I feel like that's very much what it is. It's just being screamed at by a stranger for, like, an hour.
In weird lighting. You know what it looks like? Have you ever seen Chicago, the musical?
Oh my god, yes.
Okay, so you know how the silhouettes are, like, dancing in the background? It looks like what is behind that screen would just be Lit Method, as far as the eye could see, in that, like, reddish light. Because, I mean, there's no windows, right?
Yeah, it's just like a black box. Maybe it's like some kind of coping mechanism as well. Not coping mechanism, sorry. Like a sort of thing to get people to keep coming back. Because, I mean, nobody looks good being uplit. So maybe they just think if they uplit all the people that are attending these classes, they'll just forever have low enough esteem that they'll just keep coming back.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, people look better in ambient lighting, or in ambient lighting, people aren't going to be so embarrassed about getting all sweaty at the gym.
Possibly. I'm much more cynical than that. I'm just like, oh, nobody looks good from lit from below, so.
Yeah, it's very, very severe vibes.
Yeah.
So then we join the Toms at Tom Tom, and Ken and Lisa are coming in, and they're talking about the business, and Ken says they made a profit for their first year.
I'm so glad we've got a little bit more Ken on our screen. Like, it feels like we've been severely deficient in Ken time recently.
I love Ken.
I know.
Lisa and Ken have a plan to plough their part of the profit into next door, where they want to create a garden, sort of beer garden type thing, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I couldn't work out what they were saying. Like, you know how they obviously offered that Tom and Tom could also pull their profit in, and they could, like, knock through and make it part of Tom Tom, or they would just make it a garden on their own. It's like, did they mean just, like, another, because it didn't seem that big a space, so were they talking, like, just a garden with, like, a bar in it?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it would just be another property to add to the extensive portfolio. I mean, continuing to invest in restaurants, which are not historically secure ventures, when you still have, you know, big mortgages to deal with and you have nothing down in writing to protect you. I mean, I'm no financial advisor, I'm no lawyer, but this seems pretty ballsy to me. And obviously it's painful to watch now, because you want to reach into the screen and be like, don't do it, hospitality is going to be dead in 3 months.
I know. And it's like, you kind of think, like, at some point, like, are they just buying them for the sake of having something else to do?
I have a feeling that once you make a certain amount of money, and I mean, Lisa was born into money.
Yeah.
You know that anyway. You can tell when she talks about her nanny, and she had the odd photo of her mother in Beverly Hills, and you could see that they live in like a country pile. I mean, Lisa is probably landed gentry.
Oh, definitely.
I think once you have a certain amount of money, it's just very easy to keep making it.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like that addictive thing of, like, it's not like they're ever going to be struggling for money. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you've got, like, $60 or $70 million between you, whatever, like, you're pretty much set for life. You could live off the interest alone and you'd be perfectly content and comfortable. Mm. But I imagine it is almost that, like, addictive thing of just, like, well, we can make more, so why not? Let's just make more.
Yeah, like a challenge.
Yeah.
I get not wanting to retire and wanting to keep going. So I guess from that point of view of just having a project, I understand. Yeah.
And I guess at least the good thing with, like, most of these as well is that once they're, like, up and running and stuff, once they've got a decent management team, they really don't have to do all that much with them.
No, exactly. It's kind of hands off, aside from promotion.
Yeah, which she does just by existing. So
Lala is at Britney's in a sort of etro paisley dressing gown with a gold lace choker. I thought it was such a nice outfit, but then I don't understand why she would lose steam when it came to styling her hair.
Yeah, I thought this as well. So I was actually really, really into this outfit. But then just to have that kind of, like, really basic bun thing, it was like, why? Like, you could have done so much better with that. You could have gone full 70s.
Ooh, yeah. What would you have done?
I don't know. I'm not much of, like, an updo kind of a person. So I think for me, it would probably have been a lot more, like, downplayed, but maybe, like, some little, like, braid detail or just something that made it a little bit interesting and thought out, considering how much intention was behind the rest of the outfit.
Or a long scarf as a headband.
Yes, definitely, like, a little bit of a trailing end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see that. So Jax gets on the phone and he's saying that Britney thinks he's doing the dirty on her because he's at the gym a lot. And Britney says she's not worried about him cheating, but she's just worried at his overall behaviour, saying he's getting very unpredictable and very angry again.
Which I think is a very valid concern. I mean, even if he hadn't have been, like, obviously cheated on her the last time and stuff, like, he doesn't exactly have a history of being the most, like, mentally stable person. So I think it's perfectly valid to be concerned when your other half suddenly starts, like, going to the gym 3 times a day and just, like, screaming at strangers a lot.
Yeah, he's just got no, he doesn't have a shred, an iota of self-awareness, does he?
Not at all. Literally not a modicum of it.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, I think just as we segued into this scene was the first of the weird Jack's Instagram story montages. And I think this one was him just being like, yeah, my wife thinks, like, I'm cheating on her because I'm at the gym so much. And, like, yeah, but yeah, here I am. Like, you know, just want to be in the gym because it makes me feel better. And, like, it's the most bizarre thing.
Yeah, like an Insta rant.
Yeah.
Then, you know, he's so the kind of person that gives people shit on social for questioning the marriage. So it's like, well, why go on and air your grievances?
Yeah, it's really strange. Like, I don't know if you've ever sort of seen much of him, like, on Instagram, but, like, he always just pops up in, like, other people's Instagram comments.
That's so weird. What, other people, like, who?
It's just so bizarre. Like, I think even Stassi mentioned it, like, the other last episode when her and Brittany were talking in the dog park. And when she was just like, oh, yeah, like, somebody said, like, you and Bo are my favourite couple, and Jackson just popped up, like, really, dude, really?
Like, random fan.
Yeah, it's like the wildest insecurity thing ever, that, like, somebody nobody from, like, the backwoods of Alabama thinks that Stassi and Bo are a nicer couple than you and Brittany, and he's took such personal offence to it.
It sounds exhausting.
I know. Can you imagine living in that realm forever?
No, I don't want to. They also have a Mr. and Mrs. Cushion. Look, I used to work as a luxury cushion saleswoman, okay?
Okay.
Cushions have actually taken me to some very glamorous places in this world. Cushions have taken me to the Four Seasons Palazzo in Florence. They've taken me to trade fairs in Paris, where I've met the buyers from Bergdorf. There are so many cushions out there that you could go for that would be less offensive. I mean, this is like the live, laugh, love of cushions. I hate it.
I hate it so much. It's just such a cringy level of like lack of taste.
Maybe I should offer to send them some of the cushions from my brand.
Yeah.
They're definitely not their style.
Absolutely not. They wouldn't even know what to do with them.
No.
You would just be thrilled that somebody on Instagram wanted to send her things. I can imagine like, oh my God, Jack, somebody wants to send us stuff.
I reckon Ariana would vibe with the cushions I used to sell.
Ariana vibing with that.
Yeah, very like avant-garde.
Yeah, it's very
colorful, ever so slightly boho, but like chic boho.
Yeah, I can imagine Tom being like very into it as well.
Tom would love red blue geode. I might make that happen.
Please do. Let me know how it goes.
Make my approach. So they can ring James as a last resort to invite him, but he's already committed to the other pool party.
Which I think just really rubs Brittany's nose in it, because you could tell that she knew that by inviting James, she was like grasping at straws of having people in their house. Like obviously Jack is not a fan. And you could just tell. Oh, sorry, go on.
No.
And I was gonna say, and you could just tell that the fact that he rejected that offer was too much for her to handle.
Yeah, exactly. And serves them right, because they don't actually like James or want him round. So stop using him as a prop.
Exactly.
He's like, open, you know?
Like they're just using him to bring the numbers up.
So then we go to Dana's comedy show. Can we just talk about Brett's post-apocalyptic bleached tartan shirt?
Truly, truly offensive. It's just so bad on every level. Like, we are in 2020. There is no excuse for wearing something that bad.
It reminds me of, do you know when brides do those photo shoots and it's like, wreck the dress?
Oh, yes, the worst.
They'll like, I don't know, go and wander around a trash heap or douse themselves in oil.
Like poster paint or something.
Just ink. That's what it reminded me of. It looked like a failed attempt at a wreck the dress photo shoot.
100%. It was like trying to be like, you know, the McQueen show where we did the sort of the spinning dress and it had the robot arms like spraying stuff on. It was like the very, very bottom tier as it's filtered down over the years to some like bargain store somewhere. And you know the worst thing is that shit.
Never.
The worst thing is that shirt probably cost a fortune.
It's probably a $250 shirt.
Yeah, and it's dreadful. It looks like something you would use to clean the car.
It's funny you should mention that show, actually, because I was grading some essays yesterday and one of my students wrote about that as kind of a pivotal moment in fashion history, the Shalom Apollo being rotated round with the robots. And I remember showing that to Lewis, who's an engineer, and being like, wow, fashion and robots can work together, and blowing his mind. It was like 1999 as well, I think. It was quite
a long time ago.
Oh my God, like 21 years ago.
That's insane. It's definitely one of my favourite fashion shows.
Brett is very insistent on a fist bump from Max.
Oh God, it made me cringe so much.
Bump it. Was that what he was saying?
Yeah, bump it, bump it, bump it.
Do you know, there's a business advisor that operates around here, around Newcastle area, that insists on greeting anyone, okay, millennial, child, middle-aged woman, or otherwise, with a fist bump.
No, it's the...
Saying when I say it's one of the most hideous habits I've ever known another human to form.
Disgusting. Truly disgusting. I've never once felt the need to greet anybody or to let anybody leave the area with a fist bump. There's no need for it.
Or if you were to put your fist out and it wasn't immediately met with another fist, would you then just say, bump it, bump it?
Absolutely bump not.
Inserted. No.
I would do the very British thing of retracting my fist and then making absolutely no attempt to engage with anybody else for the rest of the night.
Just decide that that's enough social interaction for today, and just to go and stew in your shame.
Yeah, I've suffered a rejection. It's happened. I need to leave immediately.
So Stassi says it's good of the boys to come and support their girlfriend.
Stassi has so few fucks to give. I love her so much.
Would you ever try your hand at stand-up comedy?
Never in a million years. You could literally offer me to buy me the biggest house you could find and it would be a hard no for me.
I totally would.
Would you? Oh, I couldn't. I couldn't. I'd die.
I don't think I'd be good at it, for the record. But I think I would attempt it. I think my day job is close enough. Because I mean, I don't do stand up, but like I do try and keep things entertaining and I crack the odd joke. A lot of it doesn't really necessarily fly. I remember once we did a writing exercise where we were getting them to kind of write creatively. Mm-hmm. And so we gave them objects. And they had to do one paragraph where they wrote about an object as though it was the most amazing thing they had ever seen. You know, like, this was like, oh my God, I can't believe I have this in my hands.
Yeah.
And they got them to do one paragraph where they had to be completely and utterly repulsed by it. And then we were like reading them out loud. And then it was me and Tom, my colleague. And they were so good. The students were so funny. That I started crying because I couldn't speak. I was like weeping at the lector.
Oh,
at one point, I got a stomach cramp and I was literally crouched on the floor, bent over, crying because they were so funny.
I love that level of humour.
But then all of the students were just like, they didn't know what to do.
Oh, no.
I don't know what they were expecting, because initially they were like giggling along with me. And yes. I think I just kind of took it a bit too far and like genuinely got hysterical. And they were like, okay.
Oh, God, that would be me as well. I'm like the worst for like laughing too much and like too much in a situation. But I'm also the worst for if things are slightly awkward of just like laughing at myself or at the tension or the awkwardness. So I would just be on stage like chuckling away at my own jokes when there's like deadpan silence around me, which would be my biggest fear.
In your head, you already know like the context and the inside story, so you set yourself off.
Yeah, and it's just the worst, and you can't come back for it. And no matter how much you make this story funny, it's never as funny as you think it is.
You're right. You're right. Okay, I'm shelving that as a career choice for now. But I used to love the open mic night as a date option.
Yeah, I've never been before. I keep meaning to go.
Oh, when things get back to normal, we'll have to go. Because open mic is perfect because either the acts are really good, so you're laughing, or the acts are so awful that you're laughing. And it's like embarrassed, nervous laughter. But the only issue was you didn't want to obviously look like you were on a Tinder date because otherwise you just get absolutely wrecked by the MC.
Yeah.
And then I actually found the MC on Tinder. And then I was talking to him and I was like, oh, it would be pretty cool to go out with someone who did stand up. You know, Betty's really funny. To be honest, didn't translate at all on text.
No.
I was like, how are you not hilarious?
Oh, that's the worst. That is the worst. See, I think I'm much funnier via messaging and writing and things like that because I have enough time to think about it and I can muse over which words would make it funnier and things like that, which definitely doesn't translate in real life.
I think I just resort to accent work too much in real life, which is not good for anyone. Go back to Sir. Lisa's ties are really getting a bit much. I mean, this wasn't even a necktie. This just looked like a length of fabric that was kind of chaotically pinned together in the middle with some rhinestones.
Yeah, and the rhinestones really were what tipped it over the edge for me.
It wasn't good.
It wasn't. And I mean, Lisa, you're better than that. We know you're better than that.
Ariana is behind the bar and she's supposedly doing better.
Which is nice. And I do like that they've kind of given that platform of like talking about depression and things like that, which I think is good.
It's good, but the cynic in me was like,
yeah,
well, she would be feeling better towards the end of the season, wouldn't she? That's a bit of closure there.
Yeah, that's a lovely circle that we've just come in.
But yeah, I think I agree with you. It's nice to kind of air it out in the open. I don't think she's particularly grumpy or miserable, you know? I think she's just quite honest. And
I do as well. And like, I don't really understand why, like, Ariana and Stassi have quite a similar like delivery of things. Like they're both a bit cynical and a bit bitchy and a bit sort of deadpan with things. So I don't understand why Ariana always gets painted as this like super miserable, boring, not a good time kind of a person. And Stassi isn't.
Yeah, because if anything, she's mouthing off a lot more and actually, you know, upsetting people a lot more.
So I just think that's a bit of a shitty double standard. However, saying that, I was not, the first time I've ever not been impressed with Ariana was when she was like, oh, well, it was everybody else's idea to have this double pool party. It was like, no, it wasn't. It wasn't Ariana. And you're usually so good at just copping to things.
We transitioned seamlessly to Nighthawk.
Yeah, I think that was the name of it.
This is the after party of the comedy show. Ugh. Is it?
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that Sheena just swans in late. It's like it's never established whether she wasn't invited or whether she just didn't go, but she shows up now, which is all that matters.
Yeah, and she says she's within walking distance. Brett, in this scene as well, is 100% wearing boat shoes without socks.
Oh, no.
A most heinous of crimes.
And especially with that fucking plaid shirt.
So Lala's like, I'm a grown-ass woman. I'm not going somewhere without furniture. I'll be at Jackson Britney's like an adult.
Yeah. Which is truly the most adult way of handling anything.
Yeah, I just thought this was very stupid. I mean, the thing is, Jack sucks up to Randall so much. Like, of course, Lala's going to be on their side.
Oh, absolutely. Because she knows that at some point she can leverage anything she wants out of Jackson Britney because they're so besotted with Randall.
And his massive bank account.
Yeah.
So Jax is now rage texting Sheena.
Oh, I just don't understand this. Like, I don't understand where all these texts are coming from. Like, I don't know if there's context that we're missing or whether it is just so wild that there is no context.
I think it is just a switch in his brain. And at this point, Stassi says that she's going to take it upon herself to confront Jax, which I thought was quite a good move.
I do as well. And I think she's right. Like, he is scared of her. But I also think she has so little to lose from her friendship and relationship with Jax. Do you know what I mean? Like, there is just no relevance for them to pretend with each other anymore. They've done enough to each other. Well, Jax has done a lot to Stassi, where it's like there's so few fucks to give about it. So I think she probably is the right person to speak to him.
Yeah, she's external enough.
Yeah.
So then they all start talking about the love triangle that's going on, and Lala's like, so guys, what's the vibe?
I hate when people do this. I hate when people just like put it out on the table for everybody to sort of like dissect and jump on, which is exactly what happened, to be fair.
Oh, nobody has ever done this to me, but I would be fully mortified.
I would as well. Like, luckily, it's never really happened to me either. But there's been enough where it's like been in a group of people and people have been like, oh, so what's happening with you and such? And it puts you so much on the spot and it's just horrendous. There is no right or wrong way of getting out of that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the kind of person, I will happily tell you all of the like most terrible and embarrassing things I've ever done. But if someone wants to engage me in some kind of emotional discourse in front of other people, I would rather die.
Yeah, I'm literally exactly the same. It's like I'm very choosy about who I opt to be like that with. So the idea of somebody just like forcing my hand in front of a group of people that I haven't necessarily chosen to be open with is like hell on earth.
Yeah. Yeah. Like do not make me admit that I have feelings for anything ever unless we're behind closed doors. And even then, I'm still going to try and get out of it.
Yeah.
But so Max starts to act out about this whole situation, but I don't really understand what his stance is at this stage, where he's coming from.
I just can't really follow it anymore. Like, I don't really understand why everybody's bitter. And I mean, Dana was right when she said, like, yeah, you spoke to me last week, but it was so vague. When he's going, I mean, I'm cool with it, but I'm not cool with it. And like, it's fine, but like, it's not fine. And like, you know, and she was like, no.
Yeah, he doesn't know where he is. No one else knows. Sheena is thrilled at this entire conversation.
Smugger. She literally hasn't even attempted to hide the sheer glee on her face at this entire situation.
She is beaming from ear to ear.
And I mean, to be fair, I was fully on Dana's side when she was just like, shut the fuck up, because I'd have been furious, because it was just so poorly contained, and you could tell that she just like, she turned on Dana like that, even though they're supposed to be trying to be friends.
So yeah, it's just so surface level. But then the other thing, why is everyone so concerned about Max's feelings?
Yeah, like, what's he done to anybody else to make him sort of like a pariah, and kind of like, why is everybody like pandering to how sad poor little Max must feel?
It's beyond me.
It's very weird. I did also couldn't cope with the fact that in this entire argument, the word was just like, bro, yeah, bro, well, just bra. It was like...
I've literally written down, she's guessed up on you, bra. What does that even mean? Can someone translate this for me? What do you mean?
It was so terrible. And also, Max said the one thing that I hate that men say more than anything, where it's like, can't you control your chick, dude? And it's like, oh, it's the worst.
That is wild. I didn't hear him say that. Right, gassed up, Urban Dictionary. Here we go. If a person is gassed up, it means that she, he is made to believe she, he is at a higher status than one actually is. Okay, and then the example sentence. This is what it says. This is not me trying to make any kind of a bad un-PC joke. Blad, I'm a don in it. No, you're not. You're just gassed up, fam. I feel like a right plonker now. I mean, I love that they've included the word plonker in there.
I know, that felt like such a weird deviation.
Okay, so it's being full of yourself, essentially. It's being arrogant.
And like, is that right in the context here? I guess they're saying that she's way more. Yeah, I can sort of see it.
That makes less sense. Okay, whatever. I need a fuckboy translator.
Yeah, I'm so not into all like the diatribe of like young people now.
If I was grading this as a piece of oral presentation, I would say it was too colloquial. So Brett gets really het up and is like, I don't have feelings for her.
Oh, just the ringing silence after he said that was like enough for my skin to want to crawl off my body.
Everyone's just basically talking over Dana, telling her what she's feeling, what she should do, what she shouldn't do.
I like actually feel so bad for her in this scenario. Because yeah. she's so obviously convinced that like her and Brett are having like a sort of proper romantic relationship, like dating, that sort of thing. And the way that he's putting it across is like, oh, well, I know I can sort of get with her, so I am. But, like, we're not having sex, and, like, I don't actually like her, which is just such a shitty thing for anybody to do, much less to announce it at a table full of people, two of which are your ex and the girl that secretly just hates you and wants nothing but the worst for you.
I also don't understand why, in Brett's mind, there's such a sort of a schism between making out with someone and sleeping with them in terms of your feelings for them. Now, I'm sorry, as an adult, right, if you like someone enough that you want to make out with them, doesn't that mean you like them enough to sleep with them? Exactly. Whether that's in a sexual way, in a romantic way.
Yeah, like, I mean, even earlier on the episode, he was just like, oh, well, Max said like he's fine with me going on a date with Dana and fine with me making out with Dana, but he's not all right with me sleeping with Dana. So I guess that's like a brick wall that we've hit at the minute. And it's like, so are you saying that you're not sleeping with her out of respect for Max, or now you're saying that it's because you don't like her at all?
I just don't understand I just don't think that it's that much of a step from kissing someone to sleeping with them when you're an adult.
No, I don't either.
And if you were getting upset at the fact that there was some kind of physical element to someone's relationship, surely that's the same for them sleeping together as it is kissing. It's like either you're friends and you're platonic friends, or you have some kind of sexual dimension. It doesn't really matter like how far you're going in that, surely.
Yeah, like it's not like you're a teenager like getting drunk at the club and just like making out with strangers. Like this is like a sort of person that you've generally intentionally gone after and pursued and are dating. So I don't see why it's so different for him.
I fear I will never make out with a stranger again because of the government. I fear that Boris will never let me do that.
And even if it is finally allowed again, you'll just be so hyper-conscious of the germs and the transmissions now that it'll just ruin it forever.
I might have to embrace monogamy.
The unspoken impact that this virus has.
Yeah, I'm really worried because there's a podcast out there that says, it was talking about this social bubble thing, and it says that if you let someone into your social bubble, it should be someone that you see a future with. I'm like, that's a bit heavy. That's for me. That's a bit much, considering I won't have met this person before they're part of the bubble.
And now they can never leave the bubble.
Yeah. It's like, oh God, I can't look like a week into the future.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Oh God.
I mean, I know that I can give people like as many psychometric tests to do as I like, but that's still not going to be a full substitute for actually spending time with someone, is it? Like,
definitely not, no.
So we get more montages of Jax's stories. Look, Jax, I think, is going to push himself into cardiac arrest through a combination of excessive exercise, coke, and just clogging up his veins with protein powder.
You can see him, like, every story is progressively getting redder and redder, and that vein is getting more and more pronounced in his neck. But you can see the blood struggling to pump through his body.
Yeah, he's like, I don't even know. He's just so veiny and kind of beetroot coloured.
I just feel it's such a weird editing choice as well to sort of splice every scene with this weird Jax rampage.
I liked it.
I really did. I'm not gonna lie, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was just such a wild curveball that I wasn't expecting.
So then we go to this charity that was very vaguely introduced to us, and it's Lisa, Brittany, and Ariana. Lisa calls Brittany a beautiful new muffin. Now, I presume she's not necessarily understanding the double meaning, but if she does, then I loved it even more as just a turn of phrase to use.
Oh, God, that got me as well. Really, really got me.
And then Ariana calls Brittany collateral damage, and I really liked bringing the kind of linguistics of the war on terror into this. Yes. It felt really right. I think we'll be talking friendly fire soon as well.
I agree. I think it was a perfect little sort of nod in the right direction. I mean, Ariana's right as well. She is collateral damage, and she is married to the problem in all of this.
She's not married to the mob. She's married to the problem. This was another episode that was very frenetic and jumping around loads of different places. So now we're suddenly with Katie and Tom in some restaurant. Now, is Katie's wedding ring a heart shape?
I think it is.
Oh.
I know.
Oh, I know.
I also realised that until this point, I hadn't even missed that she wasn't in the episode at all.
Yeah.
Which makes me kind of just think, like, Katie's just there because of habit now, rather than that she's really bringing anything to the table. I mean, even this little bit of drama with Brittany, it was just like, do we care? Probably not.
Yeah, and then when she's talking about the fact that, like, they're such a good team, they've come so far, it was like, in what way have you contributed to the success?
And again, they just said everything to each other that, like, flat, emotionless tone that they use when they're speaking to each other. Blah, blah, I'm so proud of you. You've come so far. Haven't we done so good? It's like, oh, it's like she's reading from a script of like 101 things you should say to your other half when you're trying not to be a bitch.
That's a book. I want you to write it.
I think that could be my future.
Then what I did enjoy was I think Tom started to talk propaganda. He was like, yeah, they're just so good at like propaganda. And I was like, yes, I love this whole vocabulary of war being brought into it.
We've gotten very military.
Continue.
I hope so as well. I did actually, and I never thought these words would leave my mouth, I did almost feel bad for Katie when she was getting the brunt end of it, when everybody was texting her like, I can't believe you've done this. And it's like, she really had nothing to do with it. I mean, she was heavily on board with the idea, but she had nothing to do with it.
No, I did too, actually. I don't actually think Katie is that awful. I think she's probably gone through a lot more than, you know, I think she probably does have some kind of lasting brain sort of side effects from this fall that she's had. And I don't think she should be in a relationship with Tom, but maybe if she wasn't, she would be a bit more of a happy person. I don't know.
I know. And I think it is that thing, like with Katie, like I sort of go through these phases where it's like, I actually start to warm to her. And then she just does something that's so wildly callous and out of the blue. And I'm just like, why? Why have you spoiled it again? Like, I was literally just about to be on your side.
Yeah, she swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
So we go back to Jax and Brittany's, and Jax is fully now airing his martyr complex. He's like, everyone who's coming is engaged and mature.
Like, those are the benchmarks of a good, successful party, is that if everybody at your party is engaged, then therefore it should be good.
Engaged and mature. Like, yeah, that's what you want your party to be.
Yes.
Mature people behaving themselves. No.
At a fucking pool party.
And then we go to Tom and Ariana's. I love their little yurt set up at the back.
I love that as well. I was thinking about this and I was like, I wonder how I could do that in our garden.
You could do something similar with blankets and cushions and some fairy lights.
Yeah, I think it would be a nice little summer touch. Yeah,
enjoy. One of the 3 days a year that it's actually warm here.
And you know, as soon as you plan ahead for something, that's it. It's going to be horrendous.
Yeah, there will be rain.
Yeah.
I also loved Tom's velvet Devereux caftan. I'm probably closer than I'd like to admit into to men cross-dressing at this stage.
No, I'm so heavy into it as well, and I was literally in love with him just fucking wafting around that kitchen pouring drinks in that caftan.
Oh, he looked so chic. He looked comfy.
I'm also so obsessed with their house in general, and just there's just something about their little life makes me so happy.
Do you know where Tom Sandoval would have thrived?
Where?
In like the salons of late 1800s Paris.
Oh, that would have been his true calling in life.
Oh, I can see him, you know, in a kimono. It was all very sexually fluid. There was a lot of performance art going on. There was incense. Oh yeah, I think
so. See him just like lounging on a big silk cushion on the floor.
A chaise longue.
Yes.
I think if he was from any past life, that's where he would have been.
Oh, absolutely. There is not a doubt in my mind.
So, oh yeah, they have like this lovely little kind of seating area with these low set sofas, and they've got a shisha lounge bit. It has a very kind of steamy but low effort bohemian vibe, which I liked.
I was going to say, they've sort of nailed that effortlessness, whereas Jax and Brittany's was so contrived, it was like painful to watch.
Jax has hired like 2 bartenders for this party and just set them up behind like a plastic table.
Like in his garage or something.
It's like, just leave drinks out on the table and get people to serve themselves, man. Come on.
You're a group of fucking grown-ups. You can pour yourself a drink.
You should be mature and engaged enough to yourself a cocktail, to be quite frank.
Oh, God.
It shows up in a chambray denim shirt, so taking a marked departure from the tartan, probably because it's been brought up now, so he felt like he had to.
Somebody pointed out, so he thought it was time for a change.
Beau has bought some carnival games.
Oh, the personalised cornhole boards.
And so Stassi talks to Dana and she's like, what's the situation? And Dana's like, look, I've got two guys who are half committing. I don't even have like one whole person, which I did think was quite funny.
I know. I actually felt, I felt that on such a spiritual level. I spent most of my early adult life with people kind of like one foot in the door and one foot out. So I fully felt that.
Yeah, you see, my problem has been that I've been the party that's been like less committing for the past year with everyone, but then so then once someone came along that I was like, okay, the thought of that doesn't actually terrify me.
Yeah.
And when they were like, oh, let's give it a go three times, and I was like, okay, fine. And then that lasted for literally 2 weeks, and then they had like a complete panic and just shafted me completely. So now I'm just back to square one where I'm like, no, I've got commitment issues again.
To be fair, that was, I was,
don't trust.
To be fair, so much of my life just being such like a people pleaser, where I would literally be going like, oh no, like I'm freaking out, I'm not really that into it, and they'd ask me and I'd be like, yeah, okay, if you've asked. And then inevitably I would get sort of several months in and be like, finally strap on a pair and be like, yeah, no, I don't actually like you and never really have, so I'm gonna head out now.
I actually think that when I next get to meet someone in any kind of romantic capacity, I'm going to, if I like them, be on like a date or two, I'm going to actually write up a contract. And I'm just going to be like, okay, this is when the terms of the contract can be renegotiated. We'll have certain markers to meet. We'll have key performance indicators. That's very important. And we'll just kind of take it from there. But we'll have things in black and white, you see, so there's no room for miscommunication.
Do you know, genuinely, I think that's probably very healthy.
I think so too. I think in an extremely roundabout way.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe for like our wedding, like I'll just be like, oh, we don't need to worry about prenups or anything like that, but I am going to make you sign this contract so I can evaluate it at certain points.
I genuinely read an article on the New York Times about couples that had contracts about things like childcare and chores and stuff. And it actually seemed pretty sensible. I think, you know, as long as you don't make it like an arsey thing, but as long as it's like, this is what I need from you, you know, I think why not? But then I'm an INTJ, so I would say that. And a Virgo. So I'm like doubly screwed.
Well, no, same. I mean, I'm also INTJ and also a Capricorn, so the idea of lists and plans and contracts really appeals to me.
Are you also an INTJ?
I am.
Oh my God, I never knew that about you. That's why we get on so well.
I think it is. We've just got really well-meshed personalities. And also a minor fear of the outdoors.
Yeah. And just overwhelming social situations. Then Stassi calls Brett a potential poet, philosopher, or a douchebag.
She really does have a way with words, to be fair. I was very into this, and I think nobody so far has managed to summarize all of Brett's personalities quite so well.
I liked it too. However, I don't think that he would be a Socrates, so this sent me down a bit of an internet
K-hole.
So I did pitch a concept to you, which I think you might let me do, where we're going to look at some Bravo personalities and who they would be as philosophers. For Brett, I felt that he was very much a Thales of Miletus. Because Thales's most famous quote is, the most difficult thing in life is to know yourself. So I think you just add bra to the end of that. It's pure Brett content.
That's so on brand for him. Nailed it. I think you've nailed it. I think you've outdone Stassi.
Maybe that was Brett's previous life. He was just like in ancient Greece, like just vibing, like might fuck around, might do some philosophy. And he was fully Thales. And then he was actually just like a spoiled little rich kid. He was really vain. So he could just afford to just like lounge round in the atrium of his house and like ponder.
I really, really think you've philosophized him perfectly there.
Oh, God, I love the Greek philosophers so much. It's just sent me down an internet hole of like all the wild shit they've done. So I feel like we need to revisit it. That's research that I want to be doing.
Absolutely. I'll brush up on my knowledge of them.
So Dana's in the yurt and she's like, I'm hot. Somebody should be loving me and fucking me. And nobody is doing either of those things. And that is my entire lockdown mood in a sense.
I mean, I was so on board with this level of confidence as well.
I mean, look, I've truly never looked better than I do right now. I mean, aside from my out of control leg hair, which is easily dealt with.
So there's just no justice in the world, is there?
I mean, I could be happy with just fulfilling 50% of that equation. Yeah. Life is easier without someone loving you anyway. So I'll just take the low 2-2 on that and stay in the 50s.
As long as you've got at least one of those bases covered, I think you're pretty good to go.
Yeah, one out of two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked this. I like this energy from Dana. But then it also is not aligning with her actions because she would have just told them both to sod off by now.
Exactly, yeah. If this was like truly how she... I think she's very much like me in that sense where I have all these really high levels of expectation of people and things like that. But when it actually comes to it, I can't tell people to fuck off. And I have to be consistently disappointed by people, but also just mad at myself for allowing it to keep happening.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that. I'm getting better at confronting people when I need to, but I've always got this thing in the back of my head that they'll know something about me or that they'll have something to use against me. So the paranoia of that keeps me from going off on people a lot of the time.
This is literally me as well, even though I literally haven't done anything that I would be like truly mortified if it came out. I'm just like, but what if they know something?
I think that's just hangovers from an extremely anxious, neurotic childhood.
Absolutely. And especially having extremely anxious, neurotic parents as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They fuck you up, your mum and dad.
They certainly do.
What a great poem that is. So Kristen tells Ariana that Stassi didn't want to come because there was no furniture, and Ariana claps back saying that Stassi converted a spare room into a shoe closet inspired by Sheena. It kills me how Sheena is just seen universally as the lowest common denominator on this show.
And also I have to say, like, Stassi doesn't strike me as the kind of person that would copy something from Sheena. I think it's far more likely that Sheena probably copied the idea from Stassi.
Oh, that's what the media want you to think. It's a false flag.
Oh god, but I'm kind of sad that like Ariana like is being like really bitchy about Stassi again, because I actually like low-key loved their friendship when they were like really close.
Yeah, it's kind of surface level bitchiness though, isn't it? It's not really, I don't think it's going that deep.
No, and of course we find out that Carter and Kristen are in fact dating again.
So nice to him.
I know, I just find him so creepy and unappealing. I just don't understand what it is that she sees in him.
There is nothing less sexy to me than someone with like no career path.
Oh no, like no prospects, nothing that they want to do in life, no ambition. Ugh, ugh,
hate it. James is going to DJ the Tom Tom anniversary.
Oh, I kind of like this for him as well. Like, this whole little scene actually was quite heartwarming.
It was very telling when Schwartz was like, low-key, I love asshole James. Basically, because he tears his wife down so Schwartz doesn't have to.
Exactly. It's like bitchiness by osmosis. Like, he gets to say all the things that Schwartz has been dying to say all this time.
But it does seem to me, and I agree with you, that James has made a tangible and very real change to his lifestyle.
I know, and I think it is nice. And I think it's kind of nice to see something that's so obviously real outside of the show happen.
Yeah, and again, he looked very clear-skinned and...
He did, glowing. I died a little bit when he managed to smack Katie in the tit.
That was quite funny.
And you could tell there was just a part of him that had been dying to do that since the moment he met her. It was like his final hurrah as douchebag James.
That was the full stop at the end of that period of his life.
Oh, but we did get to see Katie have a lovely little, I was going to say one-on-one, but a lovely little sort of repartee with James where she actually managed to give him a hug. Although I did notice when it was close up to her face that she had mega tequila eyes.
I don't care if tequila cited it. I hope she remembers it and I hope it was genuine.
Same. And I do think it really was. Like, I also think, like, say what you want about Katie, but she's also one of these people where she doesn't hide her feelings.
No,
which I think is quite an admirable quality. I mean, there's a time and a place for it, but I do think she's one of those people where if she hadn't have wanted to say that, she wouldn't have.
Yeah, I agree. Stassi comes indoors to talk to Jax about his behavior, and Jax says he has a sprained brain.
I couldn't follow this at all. I didn't know what was happening. I literally listened to it twice and couldn't make head nor tail of it.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know if that's some kind of euphemism for something, but he's saying that on paper everything's there, but he's not happy, he's doubting his wedding.
I mean, it's a bit soon to have already been having, like, basically buyer's remorse.
Well, self-sabotaging, because it keeps him safe from making the commitment of... I mean, I know he's made the commitment on paper, but then you also make the commitment every single day when you wake up next to someone and you choose to be with them, right?
Exactly. And it's just, I think it's a kind of level of commitment that Jax has never really managed to do, ever.
It stays completely abstract to him, I think. He can't get a grip of what that would actually look like day to day.
Yeah, like, I think he just thinks of it as a one-off, like, one trick pony thing where it's like, oh, well, I've got the marriage now, so it's fine, and that's just it. And he doesn't realize that it actually requires consistent work and respect and change and management. I think he's just...
It's a process, right? It's not a destination. Oh, God. Not a destination. It's a journey. Oh, shoot me. God, I've been alone for too long. Starting to talk in, like, men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
No, you're better than this, Lou.
I don't think I am.
Deep down, this is who you truly are.
Oh, God. We spoke about this a few weeks ago as well. The way that Jax sees his actions is so independent to himself.
Yeah, and I kind of like that Stassi really called him out on that and was like, you do have control over how you treat people.
Yeah, and she's like, you're being a victim. You're making yourself a victim. And you have arguably very little reason to be doing that.
Yeah, and I kind of love that she was so just, like, bald-faced telling him the truth, which I think is something that Jax doesn't hear a lot because it gets bogged down in just bickering and arguing.
Yeah, and he needed to hear it from her because it's someone external. It's someone that he has no vested romantic interest in, you know. But maybe someone that he was at one point close to.
Yeah, and it's kind of somebody that he has no need to lie to either. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they're kind of, like, super best friends or, like you say, like, romantic or anything. So he's not really got anything to lose by telling her the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then we get to the preview. So next week, it'll be over. It'll be
finished. I know.
So TomTom anniversary party will be sort of the end of season event that wraps everything together.
I always love a good sort of when it goes out on, like, a good party.
Yeah, it just makes sense, doesn't it? You get everyone in the same room and...
Yeah, you can kind of tie up some loose ends, or you can create some more fights that you can then discuss in the reunion and all that kind of thing. It kind of puts us all back on, like, a blank slate of everything that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially because we don't know when filming is going to possibly start again.
Oh, exactly.
Lisa is talking some sense into Jax. We see Dana and Max having another, like, robotic conversation. Danica gets into some beef with baby Sheena.
Yeah. And we also see the official end of the Witches of WeHo.
Yeah. What did she say? Witches of WeHo Dunzo?
Yeah.
Wait, oh, God. Come on.
I was like, I feel like you could have done better than that.
A bit of bow creeping in.
Yeah. She's been around him too long now.
And then Jax is like, I'm like a handicapped person. Which, firstly, is very un-PC. Like, that's not a term that I've heard in England for the past 10 years.
It's been a long time since that was used in, like, normal dialect.
And, I mean, what does he mean? Does he genuinely think he's going through some kind of mental illness? Because if he is, I'd almost have some sympathy with him if he actually kind of spoke about that in a way that didn't just seem like he was trying to exculpate himself.
Yeah, like, so I just feel like if he kind of went, look, I'm struggling with, like, depression or anxiety or what have you, I need some help, that's fine. But he goes on, like you say, like, words are just independently coming from his body and actions don't have anything really to do with him. It's like, that's not how it works. Like, has nobody ever had a conversation with this man and been like, this is how normal humans function?
Okay, so Jax is Descartes, if we're going to continue the philosophy metaphor, because there's a very, very distinct separation between the soul and the body. And he's like, my soul's going to do what it's going to do. If my body goes off and fucks the stripper, then that's what it's going to do.
Now that is Jax.
Actually, that is, I do like that, because Descartes' whole kind of theory of knowledge thing was based on a hypothetical demon, like a little demon on your shoulder, and you could never actually really disprove the demon. You couldn't ever disprove that the demon was, like, manipulating you into doing what you needed to do.
Oh, that's Jax through and through. Through and through. Everything's just independent from him. There's a tiny demon just making him say and do those things. Absolutely spot on.
So if you want to follow Faith, read all her fabulous writing. Also recommend signing up to High Life North, which is the magazine that Faith is working for at the moment. You can follow her on Instagram at Faith Elizabeth, FAITHH_Elizabeth. And you can check out her writing work on faithrichardson.co.uk. You can follow me on Instagram at Louisa G. Rogers, and you can check out my writing work on www.louisarogers.net. I'm not available as a writer for hire, though, so that's the difference. I just write for the sake of it. Do you know what I'm doing research into at the moment?
What? Tell me.
I'm writing an article about goth culture and the satanic panic.
Oh my God, stop. I was a major goth in high school. I can be your case study.
Oh my God, I'll use you as a primary source of information.
I used to get picked on because on non-uniform day I went in a full floor-length black tiered skirt with, like, space buns and heavy black eyeliner that my mum insisted looked really good, and then I just got profusely bullied for the whole day.
I love that your mum was encouraging your creative experimentation.
Absolutely. She was like a hardcore punk. Like, she went to the same private school that I did, and she turned up one day and had shaved off her eyebrows and razored her hair a la David Bowie.
Oh my God. I love that. My dad was a hippie. He had, like, orange velvet flares.
Yes. And my dad also wore those, like, platform boots.
Oh my God, I love that. Disco stew. Instead of the ones with the fish in them. Obsessed.
Oh my God, they're so good.
If yeah, there was one item of clothing from a cartoon that I could make real, it would be Disco Stew's fish shoes.
Oh, you can buy them. Like, you should on, like stripper and burlesque sort of, like, outfit websites, but you can 100% buy the shoes that have the fish in.
Okay, that's immediately what I'm going to go and Google.
You are welcome.
So thinking about creating an Instagram or a Twitter for the pod, and so we'll let you know when we get that set up. If we get it set up, we're just trying to work out if we have the time for it. So other than that, we will speak to you on Sunday.